Well, good afternoon and welcome to Talk of the Towns. We try to go beyond the headlines to make sense of the issues facing Maine communities, to show what works and to seek alternative solutions. Talk of the Towns has aired on WERU Community Radio since 1993, dedicated to the proposition that everyone benefits when we share our knowledge, our experience, our concerns, and our perspectives. We're about to practice the magic of community radio, in which those of us in our virtual studio and you who are listening create a kind of dialogue we hope will be of benefit to our friends, our neighbors, and colleagues. We're your hosts, Ron Beard and Liz Graves, hoping you'll stay with us for the next hour and Talk of the Towns. And a reminder that we aren't taking any calls in the show. We're recording this in advance. Maine is a large state. Rural schools in their communities are a wonderful platform for innovation, helping students build on their hopes and curiosities. And over the last decade or more, the Rural Aspirations Project has supported teachers and students to become better connected to their communities and improve learning outcomes. We're delighted to have three guests in the studio, along with Liz Graves, my co-host, and I. And we're going to talk with them. Cora Soul is the executive director and co-founder of Maine's Rural Aspirations Project. Val Peacock is the director of program strategy and program development. She's also a co-founder. And Todd West, operations director and what's called a collaborative project coordinator. Now, I won't be listing all of those titles later on in the program, but this is the format that we're using. So glad to have you all with us. Perhaps each of you, starting with Cora, could give us a little bit of a, kind of a brief picture of who you are, and then also lets our listeners know who's talking and they get to know your voices. But Cora, tell us a little about your journey. How did you end up co-founding Rural Aspirations Project?
Hi, Ron and Liz. Thanks for having us on. As Ron said, my name is Cora Saul. I am a native of Maine. I grew up in a small town in central Maine. My mom was a really strong community activator, and my dad was a small business owner. And the home that I grew up in was right in the center of a small town, and I grew up with a really deep love for my community. And I also had really great opportunities at a very early age to participate in community-based projects and to really get to see the power of community when people come together and really try to solve a problem together. I was never really a very strong academic student. I wasn't really engaged by academics. I was really much more interested in the social scene. And because of that, the push in a traditional school to go straight to college, I felt a little bit lost. I wasn't really sure how to envision a future for myself. And when I was really young, I got a job in the Maine Conservation Corps, and that sort of led me in an environmental education direction, which also led me to the Unity College. I got my first job teaching at a public school in 1998 when I was 24. I had no intention of working in public schools, but the job came open and it looked like a cool opportunity. And so I took it on and immediately fell in love, and also got a bit of a broken heart for the student. Fell in love with the fact that rural schools have this amazing opportunity to build aspirations and to create opportunities for kids. And also had a bit of a broken heart for the students who were really struggling to get through school, and knowing that those students are the future of our rural communities. And so I took that really personally, and for the next 16 years, worked in three different schools across Maine and developed programs for students who saw themselves growing up in their rural communities. In that time, I also noticed that there was a real disparity in educational opportunity across the state, depending on where you go to school, really determined the opportunities that you have available to you. And I also experienced a lack of professional development for rural teachers that was really actionable, that could go directly into the classroom. And for those reasons, I started Rural Aspirations.
And how did you connect with Val?
Well, in 2012, my family moved to Hancock County. My husband got a job at College of the Atlantic, and so I was looking for a position, and Val was teaching at Sumner Memorial High School. She was running a Pathways program, which I'm sure she'll talk about, and that was an opportunity for she and I to get together with her really big picture ideas, and I think I had a little bit of structure to kind of put to our program, and we started to, Rural Aspirations started to be envisioned before we moved to MDI. But when we got to Sumner, Val and I's just brains started to connect together, and we started to really imagine an organization that could really make some massive changes across the state in rural schools.
Thank you so much. Val Peacock, tell us a little bit about your path.
Yeah, so I'm Val Peacock. I grew up in New Hampshire, actually, not in a rural town, in a suburban city, sprawling suburb of a big high school that I was totally lost in, not really connected to, just kind of floated through, and kind of by chance ended up applying to college at College of the Atlantic in Bar Harbor. And I came here for school, and I guess didn't really realize how much I wasn't really ready for college experience at that time. But I was really ready for a coastal small town. And I didn't really even know that until I got here and really connected with the people here and the place around the ocean. I made fast friends with people who are fishing and working on the ocean. I wanted to be there and be in that space, and just loved being in a town where, you know, when you went to the what was Don's Hannaford's at that time was, you know, you could see people that you knew and see people around town and start to connect in lots of different levels and spaces. And I love that. So I only went to CLA for a year, but I ended up staying here and working on the water and in the community and making connections through that. And then I found my way back around to College of the Atlantic, actually working at the Summer Field Studies program in the summer, just through a friend who was working there, who just kept bugging me about, you know, thinking that I would be good at the job and bugging me to apply. And, you know, it was an interesting experience for me because I didn't really love school when I was a kid, and, you know, teaching kids in the summertime just seemed crazy to me. Like, really, kids want to learn things. And then, you know, but doing that outside, and I spent 5 summers there, which gave me the opportunity to start really designing and thinking about how to bring things that I was interested and passionate about into education. So I started designing summer field study sessions around fishing, around coastal, like what living in a coastal community meant. And it was really fun for me. I loved it. And I saw what was happening for students, and it inspired me to go back and get my teaching degree. So I went back to Orono, the University of Maine, and got my degree in secondary education and focusing in science. And I got a job at Sumner and Memorial High School over in Sullivan. And my first class, you know, I had all of these kids come in, and I could hear their voices from the radio, from the ocean. You know, I knew these kids, and I knew their dads and their families from just being around. And I started to think about all of these kids who had all of this experience in the ocean, in the place outside, but who were really struggling in school. And so I started thinking about how I could redesign or design curriculum or, you know, realign what we were learning to things that they were interested in or their strengths. So right away, I started kind of unpacking all of my classes and thinking about how to change them all, and got this opportunity 3 years in to work with the adult ed program to write a Nellie Mae Foundation grant to start a Pathways program at Sumner. And that really kind of tipped me over the edge of thinking about how school could be for kids. So that program was designed to create individualized learning plans for every student. So each student had their own plan. It was at the height of proficiency-based education. We were looking at what do kids have to know to graduate, and then what are all the ways they can learn them, and how could we design these plans? And so we really just kind of exploded out what school could mean for students. And we attracted a lot of different students, kids, students who are struggling, you know, sort of on the edge of dropping out or, you know, just having a really hard time, and the students who are, you know, sort of the high flyers in school who are really interested in designing those pathways. And Cora and I, you know, we met, she applied for a job in the program, and the two of us just really clicked around seeing what could happen when we worked with each student individually to figure out what they were interested in, what their learning style was, what their, you know, passions and aspirations were, and how to connect their learning to that. And in the process of that, I'm going to give you the way to introduce Todd into this conversation. At the same time, Todd was a principal at Darrell Swinnington High School and was starting a program called the Eastern Maine Skippers Program. And I was just like, it just connected so much in all of the spaces that I had around fishing and coastal communities and engaging students. He put out this big email to all the teachers and zones, lobster zones A and B. And I responded instantly and went to some meetings and started to get to know Todd while I was still working at Sumner, you know, thinking about how we could bring Sumner kids into that program. And so we ended up our first, as I moved, transitioned out of the classroom, as we started to build the Rural Aspirations Project, our first contract was with Todd at Darrell Swinnington High School, building the Marine Studies Pathway Program, and then also just happened to be there while the Eastern Maine Skippers Program was being developed. So we got to be in the ground of that.
Great. A great introduction. Todd, your pathway included a class that I taught at College of the Atlantic, all these many years. So tell us a little bit more about what drew you to College of the Atlantic and what you've done since.
Yeah. Well, what drew me to College of the Atlantic was actually that it was the college that was farthest away from my hometown that was still in the continental United States that I knew of at the time. I suppose if I had known about the University of Maine at Presque Isle, I might have ended up there or in Fort Kent, perhaps. But, you know, I also grew up in a suburb of Denver and was really just looking for something different. I didn't really know what I wanted, but was really lucky to land at College of the Atlantic and ultimately ended up in the educational studies program and became a social studies teacher at Mount Desert Island High School. And then a few years later, took on the principalship at Deer Isle Stonington High School, as Val mentioned. And when I first arrived at Deer Isle Stonington High School, it was a school that had a lot of transitions and was certainly facing a lot of academic challenges. We were one of the schools that was on the first list of what at the time was called a persistently low achieving school by the State Department of Education as part of the whole Race to the Top initiative. And, you know, the school was struggling with a graduation rate of 57% and an annual dropout rate of 10%. And we did a whole lot of work to turn that around and achieve graduation rates as high as 95% within about 5 years. And I don't know how far the Talk of the Town online archives go back, but I believe there's a past Talk of the Towns about that whole process. So I won't go into it here. But once we realized that we had a lot more students graduating, we turned our attention to what does it mean that they're graduating. And much like Val, I was always just really, really curious to watch students struggle in high school, put forth very little effort, you know, struggle with the content. And then that same day after school, I could go down to the fishing pier in Stonington and watch the same kids, highly motivated, you know, self-directed, applying knowledge and, you know, holding their own in this really professional environment. They were valued members of their community. And so we as a school really started to think about how could we bring those two worlds closer together and have the fishing industry add value to the educational process and have the educational process add value to the fishing industry. And so that led to this idea for the Eastern Maine Skippers Program and Marine Studies Pathway, which again is where we pulled in Rural Aspirations Project as a really key partner early on, along with the Maine Center for Coastal Fisheries and schools that stretched from North Haven all the way down to Jonesport at one point. So the Skippers Program and Marine Studies Pathway was sort of the, you know, the highlight of my time and at Deer Isle Stonington High School. And then 8 years ago, we moved to Orland and I took a position at Bucksport Middle School, working with a different age level of students. It was really interesting to work with non-high school students for the first time in my career. Most people, when you tell them that you choose to go work with middle school students, they wonder why you want to do that. But I actually found that I really enjoy the age group and find it a really fascinating. There's so much change that happens throughout the middle school trajectory for students. And it's just every day is different because the students themselves aren't the same from one day to the next. They're changing so much. But at Bucksport Middle School, in the middle of the COVID pandemic, we started to think about how can we re-engage kids who had spent considerable amount of time not in school, not connected with their teachers, not connected with anyone potentially. And so we designed an experiential learning program that we called STARS, Students Taking Alternative Routes to Success, and ultimately ended up building an outdoor greenhouse facility that had an aquaponics system and a kitchen, and the students built a pizza oven. It was all around, you know, place-based experiential learning, getting the kids reconnected to school and to each other, to their teachers. And we reconnected with Rural Aspirations at that point. They provided some curriculum support and leadership support in that. And then 2 years ago, I decided to come work for Rural Aspirations Project, specifically to start the Washington County Youth Leadership Challenge, which is the collaborative project that I'm coordinating in my title that you mentioned at the beginning there. So, but the Washington County Youth Leadership Challenge is a program much like the Skippers program, but instead of focusing on a resource-based economy like fishing, it really focuses on civic engagement, and it's connecting schools in Washington County with municipal governments to collaboratively develop solutions to civic challenges that communities and students find interesting and worth trying to solve. So it's that program is in its first year right now. We have 8 schools, 4 middle schools and 4 high schools. And, you know, they're right in the middle right now of figuring out how local government works and how they can be part of it.
Great. That so is... I'll just let listeners know that they're tuned to Talk of the Towns. We're talking about Maine's Rural Aspirations Project. You've just heard from Todd West, also from Val Peacock and Cora Soule. Liz, I know that you were really interested in what's called the theory of change. So I'll let you kind of lead off with the question. A really, really great document as part of their website that talks about how they do their work and why they do their work. But I'll let you lead off.
Sure. Sounds good. Liz Graves here. Hi. I want to disclose the first time you're hearing my voice that Val Peacock and I spend a lot of time together with other hats on. I serve as the town clerk for the town of Bar Harbor. And she is the chair of the town council, which we have a council rather than selectmen. And so what that means is I work for the town manager and the manager works for the council. All right. So back to Rural Aspirations. Yes, I was fell out of my chair when I pulled up this theory of change document that Val sent us. I won't introduce it my way. I want to know how you think about it. So what is it and how does it impact your days?
I want to start with Val and then go to others. Yeah.
Yeah. So when Cora and I first started Rural Aspirations with our first contract with Todd, you know, you could hear that we were bringing our own experiences and our own connections to rural communities and kids in rural communities and our thoughts about how kids, the future of youth, how youth are connected to the future of communities. But we were just kind of doing whatever work we could get at the time, you know. So any projects that we were getting were word of mouth and project to project, working with different schools. So we were working with Todd, and we went pretty quickly into working with in Western Maine and Telstar, helping them set up a freshman academy there. And we had just all of these projects that we were doing. And from the beginning, we had a process and a way that we did that. We were always responsive to the schools, working with the teachers. Really, you know, we talk about a lot about student-centered work in our state of in education, but we also think of ourselves as pretty teacher-centered, right? Really thinking about where the teachers are and what they need and trying to be able to develop programs or curriculum for students in these schools. So we just have a process that we work through where we always start with listening and trying to understand and getting a sense of where people are at, trying to build a vision for what we're trying to do, some, you know, what does ultimate success look like in these projects or programs? And then how do we actually start to build steps towards those, that vision and, you know, and making sure that we're building capacity and supporting teachers and designing things towards what we're actually trying to do. So we've always been working in that way, but over the last 10 plus years of this now, we've started to realize that we're not Where we have our own vision for what we're trying to think about and put out there in the world around education in rural spaces. So we have been just really thinking about what is the connection between rural schools and community vitality, right? This is where all of our youth are. They're in these schools. We can think about schools as the economic development centers, as the community development centers of our schools, as the civic futures of our schools, you know, as you think about these of our communities, as we think about, you know, the students in these schools, and really thinking about what is happening for students, who's talking to kids about, you know, what their aspirations are and how that's connected to who they are and the culture and the history that they come from in these rural places that are connected to resource-based economies like fishing and farming and forestry. How does that all sort of, go into who they are, as well as, you know, their sense of their self, their sense of their place, you know, the connections that we have to those places, those physical places, and then their sense of belonging in that community. So how are we working with students? How is that integrated into their day-to-day inside of schools and inside of, you know, the curriculum or the projects that they're doing? Who's talking with them about their futures? Who's talking with them about the future of their communities and how those things are connected? And so while we are very responsive always and working with schools, when schools ask us to work with them, we work with them from there where they're asking us to. We're always trying to think about this broader picture of what's happening for youth inside of schools. And then on top of that, we also realize that schools are under a lot of pressure, and there's a lot, like, students are kind of siloed in schools, and it's up to teachers to do all of this work. And, you know, we are kind of questioning whether it should only be up to teachers. Is all of our jobs to support our youth in this space when we think about this? So a lot of the work that we're doing is also about connecting community into school. So thinking about all the partners and the people, the adults outside of schools who can be part of teaching students, building those systems and structures for students to be engaging with the adults in their community, in their solutions work, learning in those spaces. So how can we build out structures for that? And then also thinking about the schools themselves, the changes that need to happen in those systems and structures to be able to support this kind of learning in a place, in a school. So while we do our work, we are not just thinking about the youth, we're thinking about the schools and the people in those schools and how they do their work, as well as thinking about the community and the place that we're working in and how all of these things are connected to the past, the present, and the future. So over this past year, we've spent some time really reflecting and trying to articulate that, both of thinking about what is the work that we actually do, and then how do we do that work and towards what vision. And, you know, we have this idea that if we do this work in deeply connected ways with students about their sense of self and sense of place and sense of belonging, and we do that in the systems way of thinking about youth, schools, and communities, that we can get to student aspirations that are also connected to community vitality.
Mm. Liz, you're a former newspaper editor and now town clerk. What intrigues you particularly about this notion of a theory of change?
I have a... I'll tell you the top two, because I can tell this is one of those hours that's going to go super, super fast. But the two top things I am thinking listening to Val, and I have a actually from the newspaper experience too, I got to be at the Eastern Maine Skippers Program presentations at the Fisherman's Forum, which is this week. I don't know which day that they're doing it this year, but that, I mean, if you've been to the Fisherman's Forum, it's a high energy environment, but the energy in the Skipper's presentation is just different. And there's legislators there, and there's regulators there, and there's industry there. And it's really, really special. So that's one. And the other thing, I am so glad Val mentioned economic development, because that's what I was thinking about when, in a person-centered way, when I looked at the theory of change document, and it reminded me, and I'm also glad Cora mentioned her experience with the Maine Conservation Corps, because I was thinking about work. I have a thing on the wall in our office that's a meaningful work 20 questions had close to me in my life for a long, long time. And it comes from a youth development organization in Boston called the Food Project. And it's a very similar, I mean, not a thing that the Food Project has in common is that it's a work arrangement for students working on a farm, similar to a youth conservation corps program. And so they're very simple questions that impact making work meaningful. And it's things like, are people trained well enough to succeed? How do you plan to celebrate when the work is complete? Those are sort of some of my top two. So that kind of thinking is super important for the work of school, for schoolwork, for students, for the work of teachers, and for the students as they make a transition from studenthood to workerhood. And it's the way of thinking for, residents, voters, community members who are neither teachers nor students nor parents, that economic development and workforce development is a public policy thing that everybody has a stake in too. So those are the top things I'm excited about. Where do we want to go next?
Todd or Cora, do you have anything that you want to respond to Liz in terms of her encapsulation of the theory of change? Todd, go ahead if you've got some comments about specifically that notion of transition to meaningful work.
Well, I think it's, it really speaks to one of the assets of rural schools and rural communities. And just thinking about, like my time in Stonington, I remember we had someone, I don't remember which major, state or regional workforce development outfit was visiting. And halfway through, they turned to me and they said, I just kind of had the light bulb moment when I realized that in these rural communities, there's not one big company with a parking lot with 2,000 cars in it. And as we think about workforce development and economic development, it really is place-based. And it's about what are the unique opportunities and challenges of that place. And then thinking of rural schools, the fact that they're often small, the fact that they often have these really strong connections economically, culturally, historically, to their communities, it gives them an opportunity to be responsive and to connect and really meet those needs in ways that make sense for that community and that everyone can kind of feel the benefit of. And so I think, that's part of our work is how do we help those conversations happen in ways that make sense and are beneficial for the community and the schools and the students, and not so much about what is this program from the outside that's coming in telling you how to do workforce development or how to raise youth aspirations or anything like that.
It's a revolution. I mean, I think if voters understood the role that schools could play in their communities and developing their communities, there would be no end to support for budgets because they see the connection. And I think this is all what we're trying to do in this time of life is bring things back together. These silos that Val mentioned, I think, really important. You've got such wonderful examples throughout the state. I wonder if one of you wants to pick up on some of those examples and talk about how we've already talked about the Skippers program, for instance. Are there other programs you'd like to highlight? We're about halfway through a very short hour. We're talking about Maine's Rural Aspirations Project. We have Cora Soule, the executive director and co-founder, along with co-director Val Peacock and Todd West with us in our virtual studio. But examples that you want to highlight as we round out this conversation?
I think we could talk about two schools in particular that we've been in the last 8 to 10 years. One of them is Telstar High School, middle school high school, which is over in the Bethel region. And the other is the East Grand School, which is in Danforth. And I'll talk first about the East Grand School. We got involved there really about 8 to 9 years ago. The community came together and they were thinking about closing the school. And so they hired a person to do a study, an economic development study, to see what would happen if they closed their school. And what they found was within the first year, the grocery store would close. Within the second year, the bank would leave. Within the third year, the health center would close. And the community really was taken aback by that and realized, like, my gosh, the school is absolutely central to our community. And so what can we do to create value in our school and to really help people from other communities? Because Danforth is really, it's right in between Callis and Holton, right? It's about 45 minutes from any service center, any directions, very close to Canada. But there are a lot of unorganized territories there where kids kids get to choose where they go to high school. So East Grand had an opportunity to really think about, like, how do we create a school that's really attractive to other schools in other communities. At that same time, at the state level, there was a lot of pressure coming from schools to develop proficiency-based systems, which are, you know, you identify standards, which are skills and knowledge, and then you create and create opportunities and integrate those into your classroom. And we were, the other part of that legislation was around multiple pathways to graduation. So rather than having one pathway that goes directly to college, trying to create lots of different pathways that have lots of different end results. And so we started that work by working with them to develop some proficiency-based structures, and very quickly came to the kind of decision as a faculty to develop two pathways. One was an outdoor recreation pathway, and the other was a small business pathway. And so we started to develop those small business pathways, and these students this school has, you know, about 30 students, and they have one of the best outdoor recreation programs in the state. The students start, their outdoor recreation teacher is also their PE teacher, and she starts students in first grade, kindergarten, on skis and bikes, and the students throughout their whole 12 years are really learning how to interact with and be safe in their outdoor communities. And that really grounds students into the community. We also started some middle level programs where students were activated to solve challenges in their communities or to create or to contribute to their communities. And so there were several different projects across 3 or 4 years that led to products that were useful for the community. One was a tourism field guide, and the other was a big, when you go come into Danforth, there's a big sign that was designed by students. And so we were working at the middle level. We also were working at the elementary level to really bring in science and social studies and integrate that into ELA and into math. To really activate those students in content that was intriguing and interesting to them. We had an opportunity a couple years in to start a portrait of a graduate process, which is to identify the skills and knowledge that students need to be successful in their community. And we brought together community leaders and community members, and we asked them, like, what are the specific skills and knowledge that students need to be successful if they choose to leave, but also if they choose to stay? Like, what does this region need from future leaders? And so that process really helped us to imagine out that small business pathway. We were able to get a grant for $250,000 from the Department of Education. Rethinking Responsive Educational Ventures is the name of that program. And we started to imagine out that small business pathway. At the same time, we had an opportunity, the Department of Education or Department of Community and Economic Development had received some funding, federal funding for workforce development. And so the Department of Education had started an Extended Learning Opportunity or ELO program. And so we were able to get an ELO coordinator at the school to really connect students in with whatever their aspirations were. So to really be the point person between a community-based organization or business and a student who had aspirations that were similar to that. Just this last year, they purchased a building for their campus where they have small office spaces and a commercial kitchen for students who are interested in learning how to start their own business. And both pathways are really, really strong at that school. At Telstar, we had a similar trajectory where we started with a freshman academy, and then that sort of snowballed into a whole bunch of different activities at the school, developing advisory programs and really supporting student aspirations. They also received a REV grant and also an extended learning opportunity grant. And we had the opportunity to watch that school and the faculty really think about how do we engage students in aspirations, into really finding their true self, their sense of place, their sense of belonging, and then how do we help them to actualize that before they go to college, so they have some sense of where they're going after they get out of school. And so we worked with the middle school and the high school to develop a Seven Peaks program. At the beginning of that program, they had about 34% of their students that were that had a plan after school. In last year, we were able to see 100% of the students at Telstar with a plan after high school. That program also allowed us to get an extended learning opportunity coordinator, and we were really seeing an absolute shift in the way that students were seeing their opportunities post-high school. So they were coming to the ELO coordinators at East Grand. They had elementary kids coming to the ELO coordinators saying, "Wow, this is what I want to be when I grow up. Can you make that happen for me?" And at the high school, the same with middle school students. So it was starting to really change the way that kids thought about their futures. Those grants really helped us to think about, like, how could we expand this opportunity into regions? And so last year, we were awarded in partnership with the Northern Forest Center a $1.2 million grant from the Federal Department of Labor called a Workforce Opportunities and Rural Communities Grant. And we were able to put extended learning opportunity coordinators in 5 high schools across Western Maine. And now we're working on that professional development work that we have done for the past 8 years with Telstar with the other 4 schools in that region to really develop the strength in the systems and the structures of those schools.
Mm-hmm. Professional development is...
Go ahead, Liz.
I was just gonna say professional development is just where I wanted to go next. But first I have to ask, do all of the elementary school students still all want to be firefighters and veterinarians? Is that still the top...
Yeah, I think we're working on that.
That's my memory.
It really comes down to exposure, right? Yeah. You know what you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
Before you go to professional development, Liz, I'm just so excited because I was just with a group last night and they were struggling with this question of students don't have any goals. This was a school-based group and so on. What's the conversation like either at the elementary school or at the high school that intrigues students to think about their futures? Well, how do you start that conversation with an individual student, or how does the teacher do that?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you think about what traditionally in school looks like, when you go from English class with your English curriculum and your math class to your math curriculum, and you're just like do this chapter or read this thing or do these problems, like that when you think about that, like where in a school day do students have opportunity to explore who they are and what they're interested in, and this idea that kids they don't know what they don't know, and they don't know how to do things they don't know how to do, right? And so how are we explicitly teaching that? How do you create systems and structures for that? So when you think about the curriculum that we're developing, like Cora was just talking about the advisory program, that there's an explicit curriculum where we're giving students time with teachers and adults to like think about those things and have time to actually work on them. So, thinking about things like doing job shadows or doing field trips or getting out in the community, going to different places. Like Telstar has done this great job with their freshman academy. It's actually taught off campus and it's taught in conjunction with Bryant Pond 4-H Center. So there's like environmental education perspective on that, like getting kids to work in teams and work together and just get more comfortable with themselves and who they are. You have to actually build those things in. When you think about the Skippers, and we actually have another program called the Maine Forest Collaborative, which is the same approach to having students looking around in their community. What are the challenges that we see here? What challenges do we experience as youth? And then what do we care about? And how could we present solutions to those things? Forest Collaborative does that in the Forest Place communities in Maine. Thinking about, what is the future of the forest economy in Maine and how are these kids even understanding that? And then Todd doing that with Washington County Youth Leadership Challenge, that curriculum, it's a project-based facilitated process. There's no predetermined outcomes. You're bringing kids through and having them have opportunities to see things, to listen, to hear, to talk about what matters to them, and then giving them structure and systems to actually be able to respond to that and do something about it. So it's not something that happens by accident. Kids don't know how to do this by themselves, and they don't know how to do it if there's no space for it inside of a school day. So we do it by developing curriculum and structures and programs and opportunities for students to actually get into that mess and like be able to generate ideas and reflect those back to other people and think about what that means for them and where they want to go.
Great.
And I would just add that there's a real connection, I think, between a lack of engagement and a lack of hope. And I think what we are really trying to do is help kids feel hopeful about their communities and to help them feel hopeful about their skills. And when you do that with students, you know, across my 16 years of experience working with alternative students, it doesn't take a lot to change that disengagement into active engagement. It really just is a matter of creating a space for them to feel hopeful.
Oh, that's great. Liz, now your question really resonates with, okay, what about the teachers? What about the professional development?
And I wanted to maybe throw it to Todd first, especially having been in the administrator role of being tasked with supporting teachers in that way, like how are they doing? But it is, and you've all been in schools in that way too. So what are the like gaps or needs that, that are there, is that they're like professional development comes down that's pre-made and not maybe responsive to needs. So how do you all go about providing that professional development that actually fits needs?
Yeah, I think if you talk to most teachers, I think they would say that district-sponsored PD often is not responsive to their needs and is developed around a conference table somewhere that they're not part of. And I think that's really part of Rural Aspirations' approach is to have teachers part of that conversation and this continuing dialogue around, you know, where is it that you want to go? What is it that you want to do? Let's think about how we can get there and then continually supporting that. You know, it's not Rural Aspirations doesn't come in for a one day start of the school year workshop. Here's the seven steps you need to increase student engagement, or, you know, all your kids will have aspirations at the end of this workshop. It's really this ongoing process that is grounded in the work in front of teachers, that is ongoing. You know, Telstar and East Grand are great examples of almost a decade's worth of work from schools, from Rural Aspirations Project, from other community partners. It looks at the obstacles and the challenges head on and tries to figure out ways to solve them or go around them or come up with alternative pathways. You know, a lot of times professional development of course it's a challenge that you have 24 kids in this class, but just do this program anyway. It'll be fine. You know, it's research-based. It'll be fine. And a lot of what we do is engage teachers in some really specific problem solving around, okay, you're concerned that 24 kids with this range of needs and this range of background ability are going to struggle with this. Let's think about how we can make that happen. And who can we bring into the conversation to help support that? Is there a community partner out there who has a similar goal and would love to assist, you know, having kids go to the local land trust to do this thing that is meeting the curricular goal that the teacher has? Or, you know, do we need to talk to the administration and bring them into the conversation about how we could do some problem solving around it? So we really try to think about how we can bring resources to that situation to help the teachers.
And you're just like you're working with students, you're providing space in which that work, and the teachers are their own experts. They don't need someone telling them their job.
Space and a
they
process. Need,
that's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We, in fact, a lot of times use the same design process that's part of our student projects is also what we do when we work with teachers.
And I think what we find is that in a lot of our rural communities, the teachers that are there grew up there and their families are there. So they have this really deep sense of understanding of their communities, and they have been, you know, trained professionally as practitioners. And so really it's they just need the time and a very clear and carefully facilitated process. But the outcome really comes from our teachers. It doesn't come from us. Everything that is designed through Rural Aspirations is designed by teachers for teachers.
Great. What else would you like to highlight? Or Liz, do you have a question?
I have a couple of related thoughts, and one of them ends with a question. I have a friend who's a retired superintendent and consultant, and she used to always say of work with teachers that the wisdom is in the room, that like that was one of her go-tos. Yeah. So I was interested, we were talking earlier, this is about breaking down silos. And then that is kind of a cultural goal, within and beyond schools, certainly in others of our institutions too. And I noticed that was something else I noticed in the Theory of Change document about sort of shifting away from a bureaucratic, top-down, rigid, we've also talked about predetermined thing, to networks and like more organic communities of practice is maybe another.
Yeah, so I was just about to say that about another part of our professional development that might be different from how other folks do this is that we are both responsive and future facing, right? So this is that piece that's really tricky where teachers are often teaching in strict systems and structures that are part of the problem or that are causing the problem. And they're also not always in a place where they can change those systems and structures, or they might be working against that. And that's really challenging, right? Because you're adding all this extra work and layers into that. So as we're trying to make change, teachers are often caught in this space of having to both work in a system and change a system. And we're doing that as well, right? As we work with teachers and think about this future of something different, you know, we realize that we're putting out there that we don't think it should be just teachers doing this or just schools doing this, that we should be creating systems and structures for all of us to be part of this, including community partners and, you know, all in parents and the whole community in the space. And so, you know, as we do that, we have to hold space and we have to be careful, but we also have to be working towards a different future, working towards changing those systems and structures. And one of the ways that we're doing that is because we're not in the classrooms and we're not stuck in one school, we are everywhere. So we go to all the economic development meetings that we can get to. We go to the community development meetings. We go to that. We weasel ourselves into like all these little cracks and corners where people are talking about what's happening in Maine, what's happening in communities, what's happening for youth, where there are no schools and no teachers, and often youth are not talked about or represented in those spaces. So we can get in there and both listen to what's happening there and help to translate that in the communities, but also to help all of those folks realize you have to be working with schools and youth and thinking about this. And there's a lot of challenges in this space. And so if you got to do it, you have to like lean in and learn and understand. And so we call that networked learning. We're bringing that all of that work that we're doing from school to school to school, community to community to community, and all these statewide things that are happening and all these economic development spaces. We're holding all of that and we're bringing that everywhere we go. So we have that whole system and trying to help everybody see everybody in that space and to start to break down those silos. So it's just who we are. We can't help it. The people that work in our organization, we have two others that work with us the same way. We're just all people who can see connections and see networks and see missing capacity in spaces around networked learning and like build that up and create that and actually add that capacity in the space to try to help get from where we are to where we think we want to be.
And the fact that we are in all of those places allows us, if a teacher has an idea and it's just a seed of an idea, we can then feed that, right? And then it can grow and grow and grow, and we can create those connections for the teachers. And so when teacher was working all by themselves on a project, they now have mm-hmm. all of these experts in the community that are there with them and are working with them to support student learning.
Yeah.
So I can imagine listeners who aren't working with you might like to work with you. What's the process of kind of connecting with schools and communities that you want to tell people about? Who wants to take that?
We actually don't do any marketing or advertising. We haven't really positioned ourselves in a way to put ourselves out there like that. We have been very careful to maintain a small organization that can be very agile and move and shake as the state and the economic development and the educational landscapes change. But schools can certainly reach out to us through our website, and we are happy to engage in any conversations around school change or around, you know, curricular challenges that schools are facing or challenges with student engagement, or just schools that are really interested in connecting more deeply in with their communities.
And I suppose that teachers and administrators, as Todd points out, are mobile too. And so what the seeds that you plant and you grow into healthy trees, they're going to migrate. And so this is a statewide system that you're engaged in. Yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the products that are created through our work, if something is created at East Grand, we can show that to Telstar, or we can show it to Wiscasset, or we can show it to Belfast. And all of that work is sort of open source. And so anything that happens or develops in one school can be adapted and changed for other schools. And so what one school accomplishes can really be helpful to another school along the line.
Mm. What are the places that you want to kind of just mention? I think Wiscasset and Belfast. Want a very short description of the kind of work you're doing there?
We're doing work on middle level development in Belfast, and also some advisory development. And then at Wiscasset, we're working on place-based learning and curriculum development. Our primary regional focuses right now are Western Maine, and then Moosehead Katahdin region, and also Washington County. And so much of the efforts that we are putting into kind of regional collaborations or program development are within those three regions of the state right now.
Mm. And each of them kind of represents a different rural connection to place.
Yeah.
And that's really important. I love the idea that the folks in East Grand have an outdoor recreation thing, because that's what their parents and grandparents did for a living in many cases. And so it's part of that culture. And Todd's notion of the fishing community, that's what their families did. Yeah, great stuff.
Yeah, I have two projects. I'm working on one project in the Bagaduce watershed, specifically around alewife restoration there. And it's about, you know, creating stewardship. How do you do that? Like, what is stewardship and what does that mean? And it's called Future Stewards. And that's been really fun. It's super, super place-based project specifically around that watershed and the work that's happened there. And just trying to get kids to know the names of places and be able to identify that and to see what that work is. And then another one in Cherryfield, that's about blueberries, right? Like how are kids in schools learning about that whole industry around them? And what does that look like pre-K up in the up to eighth grade, and building out a standard sequence around that and thinking about project-based learning experiences for that school? And that is, there's totally different, right? Like to completely different places when I'm going there. And it's really neat to be able to do that, because as soon as you do that, like it's everybody in that school that works in that school and all the kids already have connections, and they right. know the people. Like, you know, we take them to a blueberry farm and they know all the people on the farm, and the farmers all know them. You know, it's just like it's already there. So it's crazy that it doesn't happen that way. Like, we've gotten so far away from it, you know, but as soon as you flip it over and just make it really local, it gets really fun for the kids and for the teachers as well.
And the process seems the same or similar in each location, but the resources and the history of that community, the sense of place.
What I've been thinking about is and it's this right smack in sort of what we think about, how we think about ourselves on this show, which is that, okay, if there are things that might need adjustment in these systems that we work in, what are those recommendations? So like Val was talking about how working inside some systems and we have to be careful that we're not doing anything wrong. And also there are mechanisms for adapting and reforming those systems. So what would be some of the, in the 10 years so far, what are some of the things you wish could be changed in the big structures that schools live in? Maybe that's for the next show.
I'll jump in, Liz. Part of what I really appreciated about moving from the high school to the middle school level was recognizing how much pressure the high school transcript and Carnegie units and every single thing you do is, does this actually equal a credit? How's it going to look on a transcript? And even though we've made great strides to shift away from this sort of like four-year college for everyone mindset, it's just some of the remnants of that, like just that structure of a transcript puts so much pressure on every single decision that you don't even notice until you're not part of it. And so loosening up some of that, I think, really opens up opportunities to think about how your school can play to its assets and strengths.
Mm. Cool. Yeah.
I love the notion that one of you mentioned about every student leaves with a plan. Mm-hmm. And that plan doesn't necessarily mean college. It's a plan. And that's student based. Any other reactions to Liz's question before we go to the wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, you often hear kids talk about the real world versus school, and like school is the fake world. And we have this, you know, thinking about youth being our greatest asset, right? Like the minds of youth is really our greatest asset as human beings. And what are they doing with their time? And where are they, right? They're like in these really sort of artificially created siloed curriculums that they're moving through that are very passive. They're not. So, you know, if there's anything that I feel like we can think about is like, how are youth part of who we are as a community? How are they engaged? How are they part of all of us, right? And how are they contributing? And how are we sharing our knowledge with them? And just thinking about how that's structured right now, how far away sometimes it feels like youth minds are from the work that we do in our lives and in our communities. So I think how can we harness that power that we have in youth and really engage and bring them back into the fold of who we are.
Remind us what your website is and how people might find out more information.
www.ruralaspirations.org.
Great. We'll also list that when we do the archives. But as a wrap up, what are your aspirations? What are each of you hoping you might be able to achieve in the next decade or so? Todd, we'll start with you. What are your aspirations? You're muted right now.
I was hoping you're going to start with someone else so I could. For me, it's really about reconnecting youth with their communities. And this idea, what got me into teaching was this idea of civic engagement and helping students be knowledgeable citizens who actually took part in their communities, hence the Youth Leadership Challenge. So continuing that.
Great. Val, what's your hope or aspiration briefly?
Yeah, I think our future, you know, we're all sort of worried about where we are in the world right now. And I think the answers are in rural places. I think in these places that are deeply connected to the physical, environmental space, that we have this intrinsic understanding of the knowledge and the skills and the way to do work in the world. And I just hope that we can continue to like build that up with youth and think about how to get to where we might, you know, want to be as people in the world.
Great,
but just
great.
A small aspiration for 10 years.
That's good. Cora Soul, tell us your aspiration briefly.
Yeah, and I would just say that my aspirations are tied to the aspirations of youth. And I feel so lucky to be sort of living my aspirations right now, right? To have the opportunity to be able to do this work. And when we see and hear about the stories of kids who are transformed through some of the programs or the projects that are a result of the work that we're doing, there is hard work that the teachers, the administrators are doing, that is what feeds me to continue. And so I think really it's ultimately just continuing to connect the place where students learn with the place where students live.
Wonderful. We've come to the end of a very quick hour. Be sure and join us from 4 to 5 on the second Wednesday afternoon of each month for Talk of the Towns. Podcasts of our programs can be found in the archive section of the WERU website. If you have comments or suggestions for new topics, please email us at news@weru.org. Our theme music is a medley from Coronach on a Balnane House Highland Music Recording. Thanks again so much for our guests as we talked about the Rural Aspirations Project here in Maine. Cora Soul is Executive Director and Co-Founder. Val Peacock is Director of Program Strategy. She's also a co-founder. And Todd West, who's the Operations Director and Collaborative Project Coordinator. Thanks to Joel Mann for helping engineer our program. And stay tuned for Ralph Nader Radio from 5 to 6 and 2 hours of jazz on The Groove Shop from 6 to 8. Liz Graves and I are producers and hosts for Talk of the Towns. This is Ron Beard wishing you a good afternoon.